All right, let's get it underway for Friday, last day of the week, last show of the week for the Dave Elswick Show. And Shane Stacks, friend, former politician, former radio host, joins us today during this hour on the Dave Elswick Show. It's always good to have him here. So last night, you said you watched the debate, correct, Shane?
I did it. I did two things for you because I love you, Dave. One is I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
Which is I'm a night owl, so I'm here at six for you because I love you. And you also mentioned that you want to talk about the debate today, so I watched the debate. I plugged in and watched the debate for you, Dave, so we could banter wittily about it this morning.
So, I wish I could play the give and take back and forth between Biden and Trump last night on the whole thing about fracking. But anyway, right. Just to give a kind of a look at it, basically what Trump said is that former vice president would ban fracking. Biden said, "I never said that." And the president said, "You're on tape." And he said, "No, I'm not." And he said, "Yes, you are." And then Biden made the fateful decision. Why? I don't know.
He said, "Prove it."
Yeah, he said, "Prove it and put it on your website." And Trump said, "Okay, I will." And here is the audio of what's on the president's website right now.
I never said I oppose fracking.
You said it on tape.
I did. Show the tape. Put it on your website.
I'll put it on.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping pipeline infrastructure?
Yeah. No fracking. You got to transition away from it. Look, you're going to ban fracking all across America right now, right?
I would love to.
Yeah, I'd love to, too. I'd love to make sure we can't use any oil or gas, period.
Look in my eyes. I guarantee you. We're going to end fossil fuel. We're not going to get rid of fossil fuels.
There you go. That is as bad as George Bush running against Clinton and saying, "Read my lips, no new taxes. Yeah, no. Look in my eyes. I'm going to get rid of fossil fuels."
So we've got Frackgate. although it won't. I mean, the media as a whole. Okay, now the media is not one big thing in lockstep, but the media as a whole is not for Trump. So
no.
That will not get the traction that it should. There was the other recent story that broke big, and I mean, it was practically squashed. I mean, it's like they weren't even trying to hide the fact they were squashing it.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Hunter Biden and president taking or working on getting a $10 million deal with China. Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so it's always been political theater, right, to a certain extent. But this year, it's almost surreal watching things this year because it's just so much more obvious that the facts don't matter a lot of times. People want what they want. They have their agenda. And if facts just fall on deaf ears, so we'll see if that makes a difference or not. But that was pretty dumb for Biden, to say, "We'll prove it." And Trump's like, "Okay, here's the proof." I don't know what Biden was thinking if, that kind of stuff was out there on record.
He was saying all of this, and then he ends up going into a whole thing about how I am going to transition out of fossil fuels. We're going to get rid of fossil fuels. when, you know, it, what, 100 years from now? You know, maybe if the technology is there, I'm not saying that there may not come a day, but I'm just saying when you look at all the products made with fossil fuels and all that, it's more than just gasoline, you know, and diesel that we're talking about here.
Well, that's the thing with, you know, one of the differences between the two main parties or, you know, whatever is, generally, we all want the same thing. It's, but how do we get there, right? We want people to be prosperous. We want people to have medicine. We want, you know, we don't want to use up all of our resources. But it's, do we do it in a logical way that helps everybody and actually can be done? Or do we just make these idealistic pronouncements like California did, right, where they're like, what was it? We're getting rid of gasoline cars by this date.
Well, by 2035.
What are you basing that date on? Is it, does it just feel good to throw that date out there?
Of course it
does. Or or is it actually possible? But you know, I we'll see if Fratgate goes anywhere. I love the part, and I'm being facetious here, where Biden looked out into the audience. And said, look, the lights are, he said, the lights are on, so I can't see everybody out there. But I want you to know, no matter what, there's nobody that's more for fracking than me. I'm your frack candidate right here.
I'm the fracking king.
Yeah. Yeah. That fracking debate. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. I doubt
it will. Let me tell you where it's going to go. It's going to go in 60-second ads on television in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in Texas, in Oklahoma, in states where fracking is big and where millions of jobs depend on fracking. That's where it's going to go. And I think last night, just on that issue alone, the president has sealed the deal because of every route that I've seen for the vice president to win this race, he's got to take Pennsylvania. I don't think he takes Pennsylvania now. I think he loses Pennsylvania.
You think, I mean, so, you know, all joking aside, you think Fratgate is going to cost him Pennsylvania?
Yep.
All right.
I don't see how it can't. I mean, the governor wanted to stop fracking, if you remember, a couple of years ago. And his numbers went so far south that he came back and said, well, you know, that's not,
yeah,
I didn't
maybe
really,
I,
I didn't really
yeah, maybe
mean
I was
it.
A little hasty. Yeah. I was a little, what I meant to say was.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. And he's pretty much recovered from it. And he's very much now of the opinion we need fracking.
Yeah, we need fracking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I want to keep my head on my shoulders. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's interesting to me. That's one of the interesting things about debates, because, you know, the cynical part of me says the debates don't really matter. People have already made up their mind. But then you have moments like this come out, like when this isn't like saying I'm a good person or I'm a bad person or whatever. This is a policy stance.
Yep.
Right. That's a substantial policy stance that involves, you know, real, like, involves jobs. It involves, like, how do we use our resources and all of that. And I guarantee you, going into the debate, both sides probably did not expect, you know, fracking to play that strongly. Right. Uh-huh. So because, you know, I really doubt they told Biden to say prove it if it comes up.
No, that's Joe Biden being Joe Biden.
Right. Well, you know, in Biden's weird, man. Well, Biden's weird anyway. But Biden's debate personality is weird because in the vice presidential debate, you know, years back when. I called him the cackler. Do you remember that debate? Like, I guess it was like 8 years ago now or something, where he was in the vice presidential debate Right. And he was like laughing and cackling the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is weird. Why would you act like that during a debate? I mean, during a debate. And it, like ever since then, I've called him the cackler.
And he was, you know? and he was disrupting Ryan left and right. He jumped in on him.
Yeah, constantly. It was so weird. But then like last night, he was like a completely different, he was almost like a mortician compared to that. So, you know, it was interesting to see the different debate styles. But I will say that if for anybody that thinks that Trump, now Trump was still Trump in the fact that he was going to say what he had to say in the moderator trying to get him to stop. He's like, no, I'm going to keep making my points. Uh-huh. That was still very much a factor. But, you know, even like everybody, all the news agencies, no matter who you are, is saying that he was more like, quote unquote, civil and reserved last night. Right.
Presidential is the word that they're using.
Presidential. So, you know, when he needs to be, you know, he could, you know, do that. So that, I think that was, I hate the way that these debates are used. Like they're really artificial in a way that, you know, it's like, okay, you've got to win over this X segment of the population. So you have to act this way, but it's a fact of life, and he was able to do it, you know. And I thought he even, for the most part, stayed pretty even-headed. When I would never have thought in my entire life I would see a portion of a debate where somebody was going after somebody personally on their taxes.
Right.
Right? That's not really an issue of it's not a policy, right? It's not a policy issue. But I thought he handled himself pretty well. I mean, he was like, look, I paid my taxes in advance. How hard is that for people to understand? Right. Yeah. 300 million, whatever. And, you know, he kept his cool, you know, and maintained, you know, the civil debate posture, whatever. So that impressed me.
Yeah. I sit back and I think about the first debate, and I do believe that what the president was trying to do was decouple Biden from the left. He was trying to drive a wedge between the vice president and the left, which he was able to do to a certain extent. However, a lot of it was lost in the way that it was done. This time, he did exactly, I think, what he wanted to do. And did it in a very controlled and analytical manner because, you know, I don't think you walked away from that debate and said, you know, both those guys are like the same. They're two peas in a pod. There was very stark differences in policy. And what the president said was totally different from what the former vice president said.
Right. And that, you know, that's one thing you want to see. Like, what's the difference? Who am I getting here? Whether I like these people or not, or who am I getting here? And I thought that Trump did a good job of saying, you're the politician. I'm not, you know, I'm not a politician up here. I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to make a difference. You know, I'm trying to do what's good for the country, you know, and on any good debate, points will be scored on both sides.
Oh yeah. And they were,
know, but yeah, but I think Trump did very well last night, you know, and Biden, I don't know, he almost came off like a mortician to me, you know. I know I've said that before, but or already said that once today, but like one thing that I don't want Biden for president, okay? I didn't want him for vice president, but he seems to have sort of a genial, you know, playing to the crowd, mugging, being good old friendly Joe.
He's a politician.
Yeah, I did not see that at all last night. At all. I mean, he seemed very severe last night almost.
Yeah, it's because, and that's right, he played to a dark future for our country.
Mm-hmm.
A dark winter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Let's talk about that more when we come back. It's the Dave Ellswick Show. This guy that's talking with me, Shane Stacks, you know him. You've heard him fill in for me before. You've heard his show that he had on the radio. You still can listen to his podcast. I'll tell you how to do that when we come back as well. It's 6:21 in the morning. We've been talking about the debate here on the Dave Ellswick Show, 101.1 FM, The Answer.
I have never said I oppose fracking.
You said it on tape.
I did. Show the tape. Put it on your website.
I'll put it on.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping pipeline infrastructure?
New pipeline. No new fracking.
You got to transition away from it.
You're going to ban fracking all across America right now, right?
I would love to.
Yeah, I'd love to, too. I'd love to make sure we can't use any oil or gas, period.
Look in my eyes. I guarantee you. We're going to end fossil fuel.
Look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. Yeah. I want your blood. You know, I mean,
yeah, no new fracking.
The Bela Lugosi moment for Joe Biden last night. He really looked in my eyes. The other one that really got Biden is when Biden went after Trump about the way they treated children on the border. And separating, what is it, 500-plus kids had come with their parents, blah, blah, blah. And they got separated from their parents, and it makes us a laughingstock and violates every notion of who we are as a nation. The president, I got to tell you, he was ready for this one. This was a T-ball moment for President Trump. This was teed up. They knew that Biden would bring this up, and Trump looked right at the camera and said, they did it. We changed the policy. And he went in and he looked. And then he looked over at Biden and he said, who built the cages, Joe?
Right.
And Biden was like, what are you talking about? We weren't even talking about it.
Yeah, he's like, how did that rebound on me?
Yeah.
That's one thing, you know. The people went nuts over the quote unquote kids in cages and the separations and all that. That stuff was going on big time under the Obama administration. You know, that was a total political theater that suddenly tried to get hung on the Trump administration.
Oh, absolutely. The pictures that they were showing of the cages were pictures from 2015 and whatever. It was during the Obama administration, for God's sake.
And that's one thing that, you know, I don't know how to change it because human nature is human nature. But so much of this stuff is political theater and people won't dig deeper. Right. It's almost like they want to get angry. They want to get that little adrenaline burst from getting angry. And you know, a lot of the stuff is based on very shallow information, you know, up to the point like I got disgusted with ABC. I posted something out about it, but ABC, I don't know if you saw this or not, you know how all the networks will have their, you know, their graphics like presidential debate tonight.
Yeah, right.
They literally, ABC had, you know, like when you're promoting a boxing match and you have the two opponents staring each other down face to face.
Yes, yes.
Or the football matches, you have the two football helmets.
Yes.
Rushing towards each other. ABC's promotional image was basically a boxing match poster of Trump and Biden staring each other down nose to nose.
And
you know, it's like people, you're being manipulated. Don't let people shake you up and like you're a crawdad in a jar to get you to fight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost yellow journalism, you know? And my point is, that I'm trying to make is that, you know, don't fall into the trap. Like the networks, the media, the ratings, they thrive on people being angry and upset because people are more likely to tune in on that than they are on little chirping birds. And there's plenty enough out there to be upset about in reality without you having to be manipulated into being upset. Right. So and the whole reason I bring that up is because I think there's an art to watching debates. Right. You have to learn to discern the theater from the substantial stuff. Right. And when Joe Biden is going after Trump over taxes, that's theater. Right. They're just trying to rile up people's emotions.
Yeah.
But when they talk about fracking, or they talk about healthcare. Those are real issues, is
okay.
The point I'm trying to make.
And hold your thought. Hold your thought. We got news. Let's go to the news here on the Dave Elswick Show. Back with you, Dave Elswick Show. Shane Stacks is with us. I said Sean. Shane Stacks is with us here as well. Here is the best tweet of the night. This is from a Georgia representative. Her name is Deshaun Kendrick. Did at the real Donald Trump just say 545 kids they can't find their parents for came over through cartels and coyotes? How the hell does a coyote bring a whole human across the border? Lord, stop talking. That was too good not to read today. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, that is Trump's sort of shoot from the hip thing is we were talking during the break. It's a strength, but it can also be a weakness, right? Because there's this thing in debating or politics or whatever, it's called attack surface, right? And this is why, we were talking about, I think, during the break that Biden declined to answer a very pointed question about the cages.
Uh-huh.
It's because the less attack surface you have, you know, the less chance people have something to hang on you. So, yeah, when he throws stuff like that out or says like, air kills all the birds or windmills kills all the birds or whatever, then, you know, I understand the point he's trying to make, but it just gives ammunition to people who don't care about the spirit of what he's saying. And they're just going to go after him no matter what.
I'll say this. One of the reasons Biden didn't answer questions in certain instances is because he knows his friends in the media will answer them
for him. Yes, exactly. There are a few media outlets out there that will try to be fair or that are, you know, pro-Trump or whatever. But
not the
vast
the big
majority
three.
Of the media and the social media is giving the Biden Harris ticket, whatever, so much cover it's not even funny.
Yeah, free pass.
You know, yeah, and they're, you know, when you're on all these, every social media site I'm on, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, they're all like, vote, go vote, go get registered to vote. They don't want everybody voting. They're going after a specific, you know, because they've never done that in past, you know, elections. So, they're getting so much free, as they used to call it. Was it Hearst that said "puff up Graham" when he heard Billy Graham speaking or, you know, preaching and said "puff him up" and he got in all the papers? Biden, they're getting so much free wind in their sails. It's not even funny.
Yeah. And by the way, if you don't agree with Biden, they'll just take away your Twitter account.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll take away your Twitter account it's getting to where it's not even, they're not even really trying to be delicate about it anymore. They're just like, we're just going to do it and we'll suffer the backlash. So, anyway, yeah. So back to the cages, what was the, we were talking a little bit during the break that
about the cages.
Trump asked the moderator.
Yeah. After they got done talking about it and he looked at Biden and said, who built the cages, Joe? He then looked at the moderator and ran down what his administration had done at the border and said, look, we took the people down and showed them the facilities and they're real clean and people are taken care of. But you need to ask him who built the cages.
Who built the cages,
Joe? Yeah. And the cages were built by the Obama administration.
Right. And that's where, I mean, you know, that ties into what I thought was one of the strongest moments. It sounds like that Frackgate might be our strongest moment coming out of debate. But I thought one of the strongest moments was when Trump told Joe Biden personally and politically, I ran because of you.
Yeah.
Right. Like I ran because of you and, you know, your political history and your administration. And, you know, and I thought another strong moment was like, you say you're going to do all this stuff. And I know this has come up before in this election, but I thought he brought it up well again, was when are you going to do it? Why haven't you already done it?
You had 47 years as a in the House and the Senate, and another 8 years in the White House, and you never brought this stuff up. He really hammered him. He says, "But wait, there was one thing you did in '94. You helped pass that crime act, where you were basically calling black people savage animals and stuff." Very powerful moment for the president.
Yeah, the super predators thing.
Yeah, super predators.
It would be interesting if he could. Yeah, because Joe Biden, and I read, you know, Joe's like, well, I never said that. Even, you know, I just saw he kind of whispered that to himself during the debate when Trump brought it up. He went, I didn't know that's not true, or I never said that, or something like that. And, you know, so I've been, you know, because everyone immediately fact checks, right? Everybody starts fact checking.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen anything equivalent to the fracking audio to show that Joe Biden really said that, but you can still see it in the spirit of the law that was passed.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I will say, but to be fair, you know, if we're going to talk about the debate, I think that one of the stronger points for Biden, and unfortunately for him, this came early in the debate, right? So if it would have come later in the debate, it might have helped the perception of how he did. The only thing I think that Biden may have scored some good points with, like, the American public as a whole was the you know, his trying to hate, you know, even he had the black mask,
uh-huh.
Right? Of course it was a black mask, right? Like, you know, the you know, the color of death or whatever, was, you know, when he went after Trump on the coronavirus. And
right.
that's a big divisive issue right now. So, you know, whether you agree with Biden or Trump or whatever, I think that Biden did score some points there. And Trump, I understand 100% where he's coming from. But this kind of, a lot of people won't understand what he's trying to say when he's like, look, 99% or something people recover. Right. I'm not going to shut down the entire country because of that.
Right.
Right. But to a lot of people, that's going to sound very cold and callous. So but I mean, I understand where he's coming from. He's like, look, as the buck stops with me as the commander in chief, when I look at the numbers, yeah, it's terrible, but I can't shut the whole country down when 99% of people are recovering, right? And then Mortician Joe, you know, was like, well, the dark winter is coming. I'm surprised he didn't invoke the Game of Thrones, winter is coming, you know, and
yeah,
we're
no
on
kidding.
The wall, you know.
No,
and,
he
you
didn't
know,
say
I,
winter is coming. Yeah. He said a dark winter
yeah,
is
dark,
coming.
Yeah, dark winter. So I think that I do think that out of every topic that came up last night, I think that's probably what landed on Trump, probably the heaviest that they were wanting to go after him on. One thing I think that ricocheted on Biden was I feel like that Trump made a very good case on, you know, because when they brought up, like, you know, the health care and Biden care and this and that and the other, Trump's like, we're not trying to get rid of health care. We went after the individual mandate. You know, let's be clear here. You know, he invoked Obama. Let me be clear. Got to be clear here. We're not trying to get rid of everybody's health insurance.
Uh-huh.
What we're trying to get rid is of this thing that if you don't buy insurance at a certain level, you get fined.
Right.
That's the only thing we went after. And I think that in retrospect, you know, Biden's camp probably should not have wanted to be talking about health care last night.
Because the bottom line is we know what the Democrat Party has been saying about health care. They want single-payer health care,
right.
And Biden may think that he's the head of the Democratic Party. Sure don't play that way in the news media with Pelosi running her mouth all the time. All right, it's a quarter to seven, and Shane Stacks is with me. We'll get back and talk further with him in just a moment. But Get Around Jim is on the phone, wants to talk to us about the Hunter Biden situation. Hey, Jim, what you got for us?
Well, yes, sir. I wanted to talk to you about that, but I think Joe Biden sucker punched himself with the oil and gas exploration and stuff like that. You know, there's a third of this country that use home heating oil, and the dark winter that he's talking about coming, well, he just did it to them in Pennsylvania and that eastern seaboard up there. But as for Hunter, you know, this girl's attorney up here in Arkansas that's got the illegitimate child by Hunter, he has been just beating everything against, you know, the wall to get everything he could get for this girl. And then all of a sudden, all of this information comes out where he's made all of this money. You know, that guy was in the public eye a lot for her. Battling for her to help her get some money from this guy. Where is he at now? Why isn't he resubmitting all of this stuff? Because child support stuff, court, things like that, that's fluid. If you make more money, they find out about it, that mother of that child is entitled to more money. You know, I mean, Robert probably could tell us more about that if he comes on, but I'd like to know where he's at, because this should land right in his court and his bailiwick. He should be beating it to a pulp.
All right, well,
more money.
I'll ask Robert about that in the next hour when he joins us, but right now I got to get a break in. Thanks a lot, Jim, for calling in here to the Dave Elswick Show. Shane Stacks is my guest. We're going to talk a little bit about Amy Coney Barrett when we get back. She's been passed out of the Judiciary Committee. She goes to the full floor, according to McConnell, the majority leader of the Senate, on Monday for confirmation vote. We'll talk about it when we return on the Dave Elswick Show. All right, here we are back for the final segment already. This first hour has flown past. I attribute that to my good friend Shane Stacks, who has brought some very perceptive and illustrative arguments to this hour and has done a great job. Last night, Frank Lutz, after the debate, during the debate, you know, he has his focus group there with their little thing that they twist, and the red and the blue lines go up and down the yellow line, which is the independents. It moves around as well, kind of give you a feel of what people are thinking from his group. Here are the words that they use to describe Trump during last night's debate. Controlled, reserved, poised, surprisingly presidential. Words to describe Biden were vague, unspecific, elusive, defensive, grandfatherly. So those were the words that were used. I mean, look, Biden tried to make the whole election last night on character. He looked at the camera and said, this is about the character of America. No, it's not. It's about the policies that America will follow for the next 4 years. And was evident as we listened to the debate last night. But something else is going on, of course, here in our country besides the debate. One of the big stories that right now has fallen off the front page and is sitting on probably page two right now is the whole thing about a new Supreme Court justice being given the thumbs up by the Judiciary Committee, and that is Amy Coney Barrett. The story that's out there is that, you know, of course, the Judiciary Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, passed her out. The Democrats didn't show up. And so Graham just said they're not there, they're not voting. So it was a 12 all positive vote, he said, for Amy Coney Barrett. And it's been turned over now to the majority leader of the Senate, and that is Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell says they're going to take a vote on Monday, Shane. This right. will be one of the fastest votes that we have seen in probably the last, 20 years, at least since, we had, I forgot. His name is Joe Biden as the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee when Teddy Kennedy tore up Bork and then went after Thomas as well.
Let's just start calling him from now on Frackin' Joe.
So, yeah, Frackin' Joe.
Frackin' Joe, either that or old Morty Joe, Mortician Joe. So that's odd to me that the Democrats didn't show up. Do you think it's because
here's the reason. If they just read the first line of the bylaws, then they thought that they could stop a vote because it says that you have to have a quorum and two members of the minority party present to vote. Except that after that it says, except if nobody from the minority party doesn't show up, the chairman can go ahead with the vote. And as Tom Cotton said on my show yesterday, you can't let the minority party hold the majority party hostage by not showing up.
Right. And I, that's one thing, like whether the party I like is in power or not, if you're the majority power or the majority party, you worked hard to get there, use that authority. Right. I mean, so if they followed the bylaws and they followed the rules, then it sounds to me like a tactic backfired on the Democrats then. Either that or they just said, this is a lost cause and we're trying to save this election year or something. I don't know. And just said, we're just going to put our energies there. I have no idea. I'm completely speculating. But my guess would be that they were like, if nobody shows up, they can't have the vote. And
what's interesting is that Fox fell into this whole thing. I mean, in their own article, they didn't read the bylaws either because he said Senator Graham has broken the rules of the committee to move forward with a vote on Judge Barrett to rip away health care from millions. And that's a typical statement that you'd hear from Schumer. It says, despite Democrats' boycott of the Judiciary Committee's vote on Barrett, Chairman Lindsey Graham pushed forward with the vote, resulting in a 12-0 turnout. But under the committee rules, at least two members in a minority party must be present in order for there to be a quorum to transact business. That's if you just read that one sentence that they're reading. If you read after that sentence, it says that the majority party can push ahead and take a vote. And
if nobody shows up. If they abdicate their interest in the position or they basically gave up their right to have a say not showing up at all is what happened. So that clause was written in there wisely to keep that sort of thing from happening.
Absolutely.
To keep a boycott from putting something into indeterminate, just in limbo.
I agree. As Obama said, elections have consequences, and they'll have consequences coming up here in November. Have you voted yet?
No, I tend to wait till voting day. I tend to wait till election day, so I have not voted yet. But I see everybody's getting those cool styluses.
Yeah, that's what I got. I had my picture with mine on my Facebook yesterday.
So is it because, is it a digital screen? So they're giving you a stylus to vote
with?
Touch,
okay. It's a touch screen, so you don't have to touch the screen. You know, it's all COVID-19 stuff, you know. It's as safe as you can get, I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
I showed up. I gave them my driver's license. They put it in their little machine. Then they wiped off my driver's license and gave it back to me. And then I went over to vote, and I got my I had my stylus. It was taken out of a – I reached into a bag and took it out and went over and voted. Then I put my card in the machine after I had voted. My votes were tabulated, and I walked out. I was in my mask the whole time, safe and sound as they go. Shane, thanks. We're out of time. I'll let you go. Go back to bed. Get some more sleep. The Dave Elswick Show continues at 7 o'clock. Robert Steinbeck and Chris Corbett right around the corner. Get into the 7 o'clock hour here of the Dave Elswick Show, and you who are heading into work, got to be there at 8 o'clock. You know, relax as you're driving. Let your road rage, you know, fade away. And we've got a good lineup for you during this hour. Robert Steinbeck is with us. He, of course, is a law professor over at the Bowen School of Law. His opinions are his and his alone. Josh Silverstein is here as well, also a law professor, if I'm not mistaken. And his opinions are his and his alone and do not necessarily reflect that of what's going on at the school of law or at the university. Also with us, Chris Corbett, a practicing attorney from Conway. His specialty is in engineering, but he takes on all kinds of law cases. He joins us on our panel this morning on the Dave Elswick Show as well. I asked Josh to be with us today because I wanted to make a point, and that is, even though you might disagree on other issues, you can come together agreeing on a separate issue and work together for that issue. And Josh, as I am, is against issue one. Now, my main reason about being against issue one is that, one, it is a tax, a half-cent tax that was supposed to sunset and go away. And that's not what they're allowing it to do. And then number two, and most importantly, they want to make this tax part of our state's constitution. And Josh, unless I'm mistaken, the only other time that has happened is the 3/4 cent tax that was passed and made part of the constitution for the Arkansas Game and Fish Department. Now, there's rules and things of that nature about how you can pass a tax, but it's not making it a part of our state constitution, and I have real problems with that, and I personally think we need to get rid of the 3/4 cent tax the way it has been used for the Arkansas Game and Fish. But let's start off with issue one. I voted yesterday. I voted against issue one, two, and three. I know my listeners always want to hear how I voted. I'm not saying that's how you should vote. You should do your own study. You should sit down and know the facts of why you're voting against somebody or against something and not just take my word for it. But I'm just telling you, bad laws in one, two, and three. And I'll talk about three a little bit at the end of this first half hour. But let's go to Josh Silverstein. And Josh, you're against issue one as well. And you and I politically are pretty far apart.
I think you make a really important point, and that is that we've got an extraordinary coalition of organizations from across the political spectrum that are opposing issue one. We've got Tea Party organizations and the Libertarian Party on the right, and environmental and neighborhood organizations in Little Rock on the left, all coming together against this tax because, as you put it, whatever our disagreements, we agree on this. And you make another really important point about the constitutional issue. Constitutions are designed to set the basic structure of government and our fundamental rights. They are not designed to deal with day-to-day tax policy issues. They can set the structure, as you noted, for when you can do a tax, but they're not designed to have specific taxes. And so I think that's one of the most important objections to this tax, is that it would be permanently placed in our Constitution, which is a very bad idea.
Yeah, I definitely think that. You feel the same way, Robert, and you too, Chris. Let's get Robert in first, and then Chris will let you finish it up. Go ahead, Robert.
Okay. Absolutely. Here's the really interesting part about it. As you know, Josh is a friend and colleague of mine, and he's a tax and spend liberal, and he's against this. So when the lefties and the righties are against a big tax for Arkansans, you know it's a train wreck. Who's in favor of it? Corporatists. Big government. Uh-huh. The swamp. That's who's in favor of it.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, so if you look back 10 years ago, and I'm a former highway employee, and when they passed the initial, let's call it, what they said was a temporary tax for 10 years, and they passed it in November of 2012, it allowed the public to think, oh, this will be temporary. Okay, we can do this temporarily. Well, now look at us now. They want to make it permanent. It's a big, fat no on issue one.
All right. So there we've heard three different persons. You've heard me as well, and I'm a person, so we'll say four people, all saying no on issue one. There's a lot of people that are saying, well, look, we want good highways. Well, I want good highways, too. But as I always say on my show, you can legislate and get good highways, or you can tax. The cheap way of doing it is just to spend money on something instead of legislating something, doing the heavy
lifting. Can I add to that, Dave?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dave, if taxing people produced wonderful outcomes, we would have the best of everything everywhere. That the government collects money doesn't mean it's well spent. When the government collects money through the Constitution so that there's no oversight by the legislature, I guarantee you it won't be well spent. So the fact that they're going to tax you more doesn't mean you get better highways. In fact, this process will inevitably result in you getting worse highways.
Can I jump in on that too, Dave?
Yeah, jump right in, Josh.
One of my specific examples of the concern that Rob just raised is that the Arkansas Department of Transportation has been a runaway, unaccountable agency wasting money on unnecessary projects. And the classic example is the 30 Crossing expansion, which is going to waste $1 billion that could be spent elsewhere to improve roads where there's genuine need. So I think you're right. We all want good roads, but if RDOT would stop wasting money on unneeded projects, we would have more than enough money. And I'll also add that even if there were an argument that RDOT should be provided more money for roads, there's a much better way to fund the roads than a sales tax. We should be increasing use taxes, like fuel taxes. This state has the second highest sales tax in the country, but we're in the 30s when it comes to gasoline and diesel taxes. That's where the money should be raised from, if we're going to raise more money at all, which I don't think we need if RDOT would stop being wasteful.
All right. Chris, you got anything you want to throw in there?
Man, I being an engineer in professional engineering and civil engineering and working at the highway department back in 2000, Josh is 100% right on that. You want to tax the people that use the roads. That's the people that are buying fuel. And so that makes complete sense. If you're using the roads and you're buying the gas, then you get to pay for it. Now, there's some big questions about electric cars and that kind of jazz. But, yeah, this is not the way to do it, and give what he said, the highway department, this runaway department that has no change to the legislative powers of the purse, right? They're going to be free. If this passes, they're going to be free to do what they want to with the money.
All right, let's take a break. It's a quarter after 7. John Silverstein joining us today. He is part of the Dave Elswick Show to show you that there's people from every political spectrum against issue one, and we'll talk further about it in just a moment. Hey, don't forget about my friends over at PI Roofing. They're ready to take care of your roof, and they will do it in such a way that you get your buck's worth out of it. You know, you get the biggest bang for your buck because they deal with your insurance company. They get with the appraisers. They get up on your roof. They say, here's what's wrong. They show the appraisers. The appraisers have to say they agree. If they don't, then nothing moves forward. But as far as I know, every time I've been involved with the folks from PI Roofing, the appraisers have seen it just like they have. I'm going to have to get another roof next year. It's been about 12 years since my last roof, almost 13, and they're going to do it for me again. They just do a great job. And it should be the last roof I ever have to put on my house, because just the warranty on the shingles alone now is 30 years. So you don't have to worry about, if the shingles go bad, about paying for them again. If they fall in underneath that warranty, you're going to get those shingles at no charge to you. So call PI Roofing. Use the same number I do. I mean, I don't get special treatment. It's 707-3551. 707-3551. Let me say it one more time, 707-3551, to get a hold of Joel Johnson and his crew at PI Roofing, or you can do it on the Internet. And by the way, they follow all the social distancing guidelines, masks, and all of that. Go to piroofing.com. You can work with them as well there. All right, back at 7:21. We've got Josh for another 8 minutes here. And we want to use those 8 minutes as best we can. So, Josh, a lot of the things that you say that you stand against for issue one are the exact same things that I stand against. I mean, I'm of the opinion, and I've always said this, that the easy way out is to tax. The heavy lifting is to legislate, to work and to change things around and to make sure the money is available for the programs that you want. You want a program? Okay. I think there's enough money going to government that we've got the money to take care of the programs that we have. If you want to take and move that money around, then legislate it around. Get enough people to agree to it and legislate it around. Don't say, well, we don't want to pass a tax. What we'll do is we'll put it on the ballot and we'll let the people decide. What a cop-out. Do you agree with that, Josh?
I generally agree with that. As I said, RDOT is wasting massive amounts of money, and if that agency were more accountable, there would be plenty of funding for the vast majority of the projects that people are concerned about. And I think you're right that oftentimes when things are sent to the people, it's because legislators don't want to take responsibility for the decision.
Why are they there? The people elected them to make those kinds of decisions, not to put it back into their in their lap and say, okay, what do you want to do? Supposedly, you as a legislator have the people that come to you and give you all the typical facts that you need to make a wise and trusted decision.
Exactly, and especially when it comes to day-to-day tax policy.
Absolutely.
It's one thing if we're going to refer something to the people that's going to fundamentally alter or impact the structure of government or add to our fundamental rights. But for day-to-day tax policy, that should be handled inside the legislature. That's why we send them to the Capitol in this state and every other.
Yeah, and I want everybody to know it's not. That's not just an argument Democrats make. That's an argument that independents, even some libertarians, and Republicans make all the time. You know, they want to be Pilate and stand up in front of the crowd and say, "I wash my hands of this decision." You know, that's what drives me crazy. It really does. So, Robert, what's your feeling? I feel like things, as I talk to people, and I just don't talk to people that think identically like I in lockstep. I've not met anybody who voted for issue one. I'm thinking that the tide has turned on this, and all the millions of dollars being spent on ads that are being paid by the asphalt and cement and makers of Arkansas who will benefit from this particular piece of legislation is losing steam. Now, how do you feel about that? And, Josh, I want to hear from you, too, because I know you're working with Americans for Prosperity. You guys, I'm sure, have some internal polling going on. Are you finding that things are moving our way? First with you, Robert, what do you think?
My person who supports issue one, and as you point out, who supports issue one, big industry. I'm not a fan of voting for bills that tax the public to the benefit of big industry. When was that a good idea? When was that a Republican idea? When was that a pro-people idea? Issue one is a train wreck. If you vote for issue one, you might as well be stabbing yourself in the leg with a fork. Both of them make about the same body of sense. They are foolishness at the apex. You are voting against your own self-interest, you're voting against democracy, and you're voting against a representative government if you vote for issue one. You're voting for a corporate takeover of government if you vote for issue one. Issue one is bad news.
Yeah. Chris?
Yes.
What's your thoughts on
I'm
this?
Listening. Well, so it's interesting to put some background on this. So they set the highway department up with these five commissioners from different parts of the state, and the objective was to keep them, to keep building roads out of the political arena. They didn't want to make building a road or rehabbing a road political, right? But what it's turned into is that now we've got a runaway body, as Josh explained it, it is. They spend a lot more money on new construction than they do on taking care of the roads that they have. That's one of the main arguments I've heard. And if you just give them more money, they're going to go spend it on new construction. And then where do you want those new roads? You know, I'd like a highway to El Dorado. All the money's being spent in downtown Little Rock and northwest Arkansas, but all Arkansans are paying for those roads, and they're not getting the benefit in some of these other states, other parts of the state. So it needs to be reworked before they go and try to put a permanent tax in place that the elected officials aren't going to have a say over where that money goes or how it's spent.
So, Josh, let me just ask you, how's your feeling about the support to vote down issue one is going? I get the feeling that as Arkansans find out more and more about this, they become more and more get a bad taste in their mouth about it and will vote no. Can you share anything with us from what you and, Americans for Prosperity and other groups have come up with? I'm sure you've done some internal polling, haven't you?
The only polling I'm aware of are the general polls that were done by Hendricks and Talk Business and Politics. And what those polls have showed is we're moving in the right direction, but we're probably still behind. The first poll had about 69% supporting issue one. The second poll, it dropped to 59. And I think part of the problem is that the issues tend to get lost in all of the other electoral politics we're seeing, especially in a presidential election year. But I also think you're right that as more and more people are learning about it, as groups on the left and the right, as the Young Democrats just came out against this tax, as we're all getting the message out, more and more people are joining us. But I do think we have a lot of work left to do over the next 2 weeks.
All right. We got 11 days. We got to change. We got to change minds. That's what we got to do. And let's hope that issue one does not become, law. I just don't want to see that in the Constitution. And I can't believe a Republican leading the state wants that as well. But evidently, he does. Josh, let me thank you for your half hour. I promised you a half hour, and that's where I'm going to keep it at. And we'll let you go. And then Robert and Chris, when we come back, we'll talk some different information about the debate last night. One of my favorite parts was in the audio I'll play for you about the debate was about fracking. And the last part is Joe Biden doing his best Bela Lugosi, telling a lady, "Look in my eyes. I'm going to get rid of the oil industry. I'm going to redo that. I'm going to get rid of the oil industry, and I'm going to take the piece with Bela Lugosi saying, 'Look into my eyes,' and then have, 'I'm going to get rid of the oil industry.'" All right, we'll talk about all of that when we come back here on the Dave Elswick Show. We've got Rush ready to talk for a few moments and give us his insights on an issue that he thinks is important to you. So let's get to that. Then we'll get back and we'll talk the debate. Got to talk about that. And we got to talk about Barrett. She's out of the Judiciary Committee and on to the Senate. All right, we continue. Let me remind you about Hillcrest Designer Jewelry, 3000 Cavanaugh right here in Little Rock. Eric Coleman owns the business, been there for years now. He is an artisan. He's a jeweler, of course. He's a gemologist. He could talk to you about diamonds, about colored gemstones, about, you know, just rocks that they can take and polish them and make them look beautiful. He can talk all of that with you and can tell you what is a real diamond and what is a Chinese facsimile and knockoff. And if you're going on the internet and looking for diamonds, you're looking in the wrong places. I mean, there was a song that was out many years ago said, "Looking for love in all the wrong places." You're looking for diamonds in all the wrong places when you go on the internet and look for them, because the Chinese now making these diamonds basically just out of glass or just making them fake out of whole cloth. And they've even got to the point that now they put the number on the diamond like they always used to do just for the real diamonds. Now the Chinese, they don't have any problem. They don't have any qualms at all. They just put those numbers on their fake diamonds and sell them to you for thousands of dollars when they're worth tens of dollars. And making big money off of you because they mislead you. And I say to you, would the Communist Chinese Party do that? Absolutely. And Eric knows they will. And he can save you a whole lot of money. And he's got a lot of diamonds that are just in his cases that he can show you. You pick one. If you need a different cut, they can do that. They can design the ring that you want on a computer so you can get a 3D image of it. And it will be absolutely unique to the person that you're buying the ring from. You don't have to worry about sitting down at dinner or a soiree somewhere and the lady next to your wife has the exact same ring on her finger because they both bought it from a diamond place whose first name starts with a letter, like K. You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Call up Eric and make an appointment to sit down and talk to him. Get the best for the best person in your life. 501-246-3655 is the number. 501-246-3655. All right, guys. So last night, one of the big, big, big parts of the debate was when Trump and Biden got talking about fracking. And let me just play some of that for you right now.
I have never said I oppose fracking.
You said it on tape.
I did. Show the tape. Put it on your website.
I'll put it on.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping pipeline infrastructure?
New pipeline.
No new fracking.
You got to transition away from it. You're going to ban fracking all across America right now, right?
I would love to.
Yeah, I'd love to, too. I'd love to make sure we can't use any oil or gas, period.
Look in my eyes. I guarantee we're
going to
end fossil
fuel. We're not going to fossil
fuels. There you go. He asked for it, and he got it in spades. No doubt about that. That's what's on Trump's website right now, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who's sharing it with people at this time.
Dave, here's the credit we need to give to Joe Biden. When people call him a liar for saying diametrically opposed things on stage last night when he claimed, I didn't say I would ban fracking, and he said, go put it up. Put up the video if you got it. And, of course, you just played it. The president put it up. It's a wash over Twitter, etc. But here's where we need to give Joe Biden credit. He's not lying because he doesn't remember. He can't remember what he had for breakfast. So that's not a lie. That's just further evidence of his dementia. Let's be fair to Oatmeal Joe. He doesn't know what's going on.
I'm just telling you, you listen to that last little segment, look in my eyes. I'm getting rid of the oil and gas industry. And the that takes me back to Bush Sr. when he was running against Clinton and looked at the camera and said, read my lips, no new taxes. And then turned right around and voted for a tax increase.
This staring into the camera thing that Joe Biden does, frankly, I find a little off-putting. It's a little creepy the way he does it. And you know where that comes from? That comes from insider Washington self-appointed experts on how to campaign. There's some book buried under a dust jacket in someone's closet that says, the way to win a debate is to talk into the camera directly to the people. I'm looking at a TV set. I'm not looking at Joe Biden. He's not talking to me. He's not in the same room as me. The whole thing's a little bit creepy. It's only slightly less creepy than when Joe puts his hands on the shoulders of some candidate, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, here's the key. The only time, and this is from my personal study of this, that you look in the camera and you address the people on the other side of the third eye is when it is really, really, really important. I mean, if he wanted to look into the camera and he said, listen to what I'm saying, no fracking. Or if he wanted to look into the camera and say, yes, we'll continue to frack. But he doesn't say that. That's not what he does. He talks in generalities, and that's when you look at Frank Luntz, and he puts down the words that his group writes down for each candidate. And under Biden last night, it was unspecific, vague, generalities. Those are the things that were there, and grandfatherly. In other words, old. Those are the things that they remembered about Biden. For the president, it was presidential, straight shooter, those types of words. And so this bottom line, Trump won that debate last night, hands down. And he may have won Pennsylvania and Ohio in the process. And I've not seen any maps by any of these talking heads. You know how they get up in front of a map and they go, well, if Biden wins this state and this state and that state and this state, that's his road to the presidency. That's where he gets his 2 seats.
Right.
None of those. If he doesn't get Pennsylvania, he don't win. And I think he shot himself not in the foot but in the head with this whole thing about fracking with Pennsylvania voters.
Well, if he shot himself in the foot, it'd do more damage to himself than if he shot himself in the head.
Wow.
That's brutal.
Yeah, that is brutal. Gosh, now I'm not even that brutal.
I think Trump won the debate. Yeah.
Well, when he walks in a big wind, you can hear the whistling from between the ears.
There he goes, man. Yeah. So go ahead, Chris. You were saying.
I think Trump won the debate. I think the points that stuck out in my head were, one, who built the cages? Two, he looked at Joe and said, Joe, you're all talk and no action. He's like, you're why I ran. You're why I got elected. It was huge.
Yeah, that was a big moment. You're the reason I ran is because you're just a typical politician, all talk, no action. You know, you don't get anything done. Except, and then he caveated on that, he said, except for the 1994 crime bill. Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Wham. That was a big hit. That was a big hit as well. Where you talked about black men being super predators. Woo! Woo! I'm just telling you. Just telling you, it was not a good night for Joe, you know? What was it Paul Simon said about Jauntin' Joe? I mean, he's talking about Joe DiMaggio, but we could use that as some music from him about Joe Biden. Although, I've not heard much from Simon and Garfunkel lately. I think people have kind of forgotten about them as far as
things. Are they alive?
Yeah, they're still alive.
Yeah.
They're still alive. I hadn't heard anything about either one of them passing yet. And when they pass, now everybody will be talking about them when they pass, no doubt.
Sure.
Because they were so Sounds of Silence and I Am a Rock are two of the biggest rock songs ever written. Probably two of the top 10 songs ever written for rock and roll. Guys, it's a quarter till 8. When we come back, I want to talk about a local race. David Allen Bubbas, better known as one of the sons of David, who started David's Burgers, is running for election, and I want to mention that so that people how it all can go as far as that's concerned. So let's talk about that when we get back. We'll be back in just a moment. Quick break here on the Dave Elswick Show. All right, so David Allen Bubbas is running for the at-large Little Rock seat. Which one is it? Analyze directors, voters would choose for the position 9 seat. Is what it is. Here's the people who are running. David Allen Bubbas, and the David should be very familiar to you, David's Burgers. He is the owner of the David's Burgers, a chain with 9 stores in Central Arkansas. And then the other people are Tom Horton, 69-year-old retired pharmacist. And also we're looking at LaRon Mikado, 49, saying that he's affected change through education, through activism and protest, and through art and music. Ron Muse is a professor with a background in cultural anthropology, said listening and observation as well as note-taking and analysis would be among his strengths as a city director. Also, Dale Peeker, a 70-year-old retired economist, decided to run for office first and foremost because of a discovery about Kamek Village and the Little Rock Fire Department. Antoine Phillips, 36, running for city board is something he's wanted to do for a long time. Glenn Schwartz, a perennial candidate for public office who advocates for marijuana decriminalization, will appear on the ballot as Thorium Glenn Schwartz. That's what he's just appearing as. I don't get the thorium. But those are the people that are running for the at-large places. I would assume that after it's all over, whoever has if you got more than 50%, then you win. If you don't, then it'd be you and the next highest vote getter in a runoff. Is that the way to understand it? I mean, this is your area, Mr. Steinbach.
that's funny you mentioned that, because I was talking with Chris just before we came on about that. And I think that's right in terms of the runoff, but I'm frankly not particularly sure. And that's why don't we just all go out and do the right thing up front and vote for David Allen Bubba's of David's Burgers. By the way, David was a student of mine. He's a lawyer. He's a lawyer and a businessman who owns a chain of fantastic hamburger restaurants. And it started in Conway. There are plenty in Little Rock area as well, as you know, and certain other areas within Central Arkansas. And yeah, David Brian. Allen Bubba's is by far the most qualified person and the most right and correct thinking person to run for city council in decades, for Little Rock City Council, which is generally populated by a bunch of left-wing wind nuts. And you heard some of it in Dave's description of the things that these people are thinking about. They're thinking about playing music and putting incense on. David Allen Bubba's is a businessman. As you said, he served the people by serving them burgers, at least so far, and he will serve the people by being on the city council. He knows the law because he's a lawyer, so he's not going to be bulldozed like so many of these city council people who don't know what's going on. And he will stand up to the abuses that we have seen repeatedly by this mayor in terms of being anti-police, bringing in an outsider to be our police chief, who's just been a train wreck, who can't get out of his own way, who's being sued by a handful of senior executives in the police department because he has no support from the police and he's got no support from the people. So if you support Mayor Scott, well, then vote for one of the other hacks. But if you support conservative ideas, pro-business and pro-worker and economic ideas, then vote for David Bubba's, because he's the only candidate on the ballot that is going to grow the economy and push back against the leftist ideology of this out-of-control mayor.
You know, you make a valid point, is that what Little Rock needs just about above everything is some businessmen who can get in and help the city dig themselves out of a financial hole that they've been part of for many, many, many years. And good businessmen like Bubba's would be a good way to go in that direction. I'll be honest, I don't know that much about all the other candidates. One of the gentlemen said that the reason he's running is because he wants to support the police and fire department. So sounds like he's speaking a little bit of my lingo as far as that goes. But I do know David Allen Bubba's, and he is a very thoughtful and good businessman. And as you said, Robert, he is a lawyer, and he knows the law so that he doesn't get bamboozled by stupid stuff that this mayor tends to do from time to time. Chris, you want to jump in on this as well?
Yes, absolutely. Bubba's is the only choice for me. It's not just because he or colleagues as lawyers. That's a great training in your mind to understand both sides. So he's going to be fair sitting on city council. But he's got a successful business, right? He knows how to run a business. He knows how to manage a budget. He knows how to deal with long, drive-through lines. These are things that he's taken. It's okay. We got to do this. We got to do that. He's going to take those same business abilities and apply them to the city. And we see something outrageous or just plain stupid that the city of Little Rock's doing that hurts its citizens. The oppressive business licensing regime that the city employs. Bubba's is going to put a stop to that, because he's pragmatic, he's a successful business owner, 9 locations, he's growing that business, and through no help of the government, right? They taxing him, they got the hamburger tax he's dealing with, and I think he's going to get in there and do a fantastic job. So I hope he gets elected. And by the way, he doesn't have to do this. It's going to be a lot of time away from making money. He wants to make the city of Little Rock better.
and we need a change, and Bubba's can do it. He's got the training. He's got the experience. He's young. And what we don't need is some retired folks going, oh, I'm retired and I can come help the city. No. Well, who's not for the firemen and who's not for the police? Bubba's is going to take care of the city if he gets elected.
Well, I got to say this. I mean, a lot of people may vote for him just because they like his burgers here. He's got a location in Cabot over on 89 that I frequent quite often. And I, now that we've been talking about it, my mouth's watering. So I think I will make my way over there for lunch today. And I'm not going to have the hamburger today, though, guys. I'm going to have the chicken steak that they make. They make they make the best chicken steak over at David's Burgers of any place I have ever been. They season it correctly. It's just wonderful what they do at David's Burgers with that. Guys, we're out of time for this hour. It went fast. I mean, really fast. Had a lot to be said about issue one and now about the at-large opening that they have on the city council. When we come back, let's talk about some things nationally as well. Again, Amy Coney Barrett was voted out of the Senate Judicial Committee yesterday. We'll talk about what the Democrats tried to do and it didn't work. And now the majority leader says the vote is impending on Monday. So we'll talk about that as well here on the Dave Elswick Show. Robert Steinbach and Chris Corbett, my guest hosts with me. 8:30, Matt Smith will be around. We'll talk movies. It's still to come at 6 o'clock tonight here on the Dave Elswick Show. The live segments are done. We'll talk to you at 6 when we get back on the air here at 101.1 FM, The Answer. Let's get going here in the 6 o'clock hour as Robert Steinbach joins me. Robert is a law professor at the Bowen School of Law, UALR, and his opinions are his and his alone and do not necessarily represent those of the school or of the university. Also, Chris Corbett is with me here on the Dave Elswick Show. He is a lawyer in Conway and also is a a guy who does engineering. As you've heard on the show before, he's talked about how he worked with the highway department. And I'm assuming that was as an engineer. Is that correct, Chris?
100% correct. I worked in the planning and research section, and we got to play with all the new engineering toys.
Wow, that's very cool. So,
one of the main things I did was maintain the smoothness for new highways. We would measure the smoothness of the new highways, and we would pay contractors a bonus based on the smoothness. How about that?
That's pretty cool. Were you all the ones responsible for going 67-167 at one time was just horrible. You'd ride on it, and it was down the road, And then they came in, and they, ground off the top layer, and they put something on the road, and it was as smooth as a baby's butt. Was that something that you worked on when you were at the highway department?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's mainly the work of a professor that's now the dean up at the engineering school. Called SuperPave. It's a asphalt mix that rivals smoothness. I mean, just it's asphalt's always been smoother than concrete.
Right.
Just driving the roads, you may not have realized we've got some out of asphalt and some out of concrete. And
super pave is what you're talking about,
super
and that asphalt. Yeah, super pave.
That stuff is
Chris,
good.
Chris, weren't people
tell you.
Flying off the highways with super pave because it's slick?
You know, that was that they thought that, like, maybe it wasn't draining right, or but no, that was never. There was a lawsuit about that. A prominent, I can't remember his name, but a very unfortunate situation. A prominent executive at Axiom slid off the highway there on 167, and there was a lawsuit. And it wouldn't prove that it was because of super pave, but yeah, roads can be slick, especially when it starts raining. You know, that just that small drizzle on it. It can be problematic, but it wasn't because of super pave.
Yeah, you got.
You know,
dust,
super pave is my favorite of all of the X-Men.
Yeah. Super pave. You know, I tell you what. But here's the deal. We beat up on the highway department a little bit, but there are pockets of excellence in the highway department. There are some smart people there. They're the largest employer of civil engineers in the state. I wish some of the civil engineers would get more involved in the professional groups, the American Society of Civil Engineers and the National Society of Professional Engineers, but they don't, unfortunately. They've got a hard job over there, and they do what they can, but giving them controlled spending powers is not what needs to happen, right?
Well, that's not what's necessary in any branch of government. You know, the people have to have some way of controlling that, or they'll bleed us dry. We will die from the death of 1,000 cuts. In our case, 1,000 taxes. I mean, they're doing that with sales tax as it is right now.
Oh, sales tax is so high. People need to look at the tax when you go buy one of Bubba's hamburgers, right?
Yeah.
Look at the tax on that thing. It's like, what, 13% now?
Yeah. Look at the tax on your cell phone.
Because they have that hamburger tax built into it, which the city of Little Rock collects money so that they can go out and advertise for private businesses. The private businesses can advertise well enough on their own without taxing me to pay for private business advertising run through a government-run bureaucracy. And it's like what you were saying, Chris, about pockets of excellence in the highway department. Yeah, but the problem is those pockets are filled with lint that is the cronyism and corruption that wants to tax you through the Constitution. Vote no on issue one.
I agree. Yeah, wholeheartedly with that.
Yeah, and hopefully Bubba's will see like what some of those funds are being spent on at this advertising and promotion committee, right? This hamburger tax, they took some of that tax money, our tax money, and bought the old Cromwell Engineering building. They're the city's landlords now. Well, since when do we need the city to be a landlord and be renting out offices and competing with other commercial and landlords in the city? And it was a terrible deal. They bought that building for like $5 million, and now they rent it out. It'd be interesting to pull some of those rental rates that they're getting. It's a nice building right across from the courthouse, Pulaski County Courthouse. They don't need to be taking our tax money.
We need the Freedom of Information Act to request those documents.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, Chris. Why is I-40 so absolutely terrible between Memphis and Little Rock? How come they can't fix that?
I'll tell you what, here's the deal from an engineering standpoint. The way you design a highway is based on the amount of pounding it gets. In a layman's term, how many hits does it take across that highway? When I say a hit, how many impact loads from diesel truck, big rigs, 80,000-pound vehicles? Those vehicles pound that road to shreds. You could drive you could drive passenger cars for 50 years and never hurt it. But you put those 80,000-pound big rigs on there, and that's what beats up that highway. And basically, Arkansas is the bridge across America. All the stuff coming up from Texas, from California, all comes across I-40, across the state of Arkansas, and that road gets pounded.
Rob well knows, we can't put a gate up at the borders in Oklahoma and a gate up at Memphis and tax folks that come across Arkansas. It shut down commerce, right? But it gets pounded on by trucks from California all the way to Florida. And that's essentially what pounds on that road, and it's an enormous amount of traffic.
Well, I-40 runs from the East Coast to the West Coast. Everybody needs to understand that. That's why it's one of the big drug highways of America as well. And then they got I-30 connecting Texas and Mexico across our state as well. But why can't that be, you know, worked into the design of the highway? First of all, why do they fight against making it, six lanes and just instead of just four lanes, so that the trucks can stay just in two of the three lanes on either side? Is there some kind of political reason for that? Chris,
I called some of my engineering buddies over there, and I said, give me your arguments for the tax. What's going on? Why are you spending all this money on new construction? Here is what they told me. They said, here's how it works. So when we pay taxes at the gas pump, all that money funnels into the federal government, into one lump sum. And then they have this turn back money. So we get money back from the federal government on these diesel taxes, right, and the tax on gasoline. And then, but what they do is they tie that money to construction and not maintenance. So if you want the money, you have to go spend it. So there's some problems, there's some issues there that I'm not fully educated on about how they get to diversify that money into maintenance versus new construction. The argument that was made to me, and I don't fully understand it, is you have to get it and spend it on new construction. You can't get it and then decide to spend 90% of it on maintenance. So that's where the issue comes in with how the money is spent from the gasoline tax.
It would seem to me that if that's the case, then one of the things that they would do is they look where the cars are, and your new construction would be where the cars are, not where the cars ain't.
That's right. That's right. And then, so go back to how the commission is set up. Would El Dorado be bigger if we had a four lane highway heading down to El Dorado? So build the roads and they will come. That's not how the highway department works. That's not how traffic engineers work. The way it works is, this is unfortunate, but you don't build a road and expect the traffic to be there. You wait till the road is at capacity, and then you expand it. And then what's awful is, normally what happens is, you take that road, and it's at capacity, so you add another lane. As soon as you add that lane, it's already at capacity again. So there's a problem there with how we're planning roads, right? How we decide where the new construction is going to be.
All right. Well, we're at something that I wasn't intending to get into, but it does bring up one last question, and is that do we need a change in the way that the highway department is run? Doesn't it make sense that the populace of the state should have a say in the highway department, which means that the legislative branch of this government, not to mention the executive and the court systems, should have a say as well. I mean, they are people that are elected by the people of the state.
That's right. That's right, Dave. So let me give you a little more history on the Arkansas Highway Department. They just changed their name to ARDOT.
Right.
They're not really technically a Department of Transportation. They're only over the highways. The Texas DOT is over the airports, the rivers, the roads. So I think it was a little disingenuous to call it ARDOT, but they wanted to do it. But typically, a state Department of Transportation, Texas, Oklahoma DOT, OK DOT, they got TX DOT. Those are truly departments of transportation because they're over the airplanes, the airports,
all methods of transportation.
Yes. Yeah, so we've got a little bit of a strange animal here where, like, when I would go to some of the national transportation meetings, the director of the highway department from Arkansas would have been there 15 years when the TxDOT was there for 3 years. Tennessee TxDOT was there for 2 years. So they had transition in the leadership in order to bring in new ideas. Our DOT's not that way. Highway department's not that way. Our executive director stays a long time, and they're paid well.
Well, they stay at the decision of the governor, don't they?
No, the executive director is hired by the commission, and the commission's an independent body. But then that commission is appointed by the governor. Appointment's a big. There you go. Now you go. Get it? Yeah. That's where the rub is.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, it was one of the few things that Jeremy Hutchinson, while he was still a senator, threatened the Department of Transportation with, was changing them, and they got scared, and they started telling Jeremy that they would do all these things that he wanted done, but they didn't have to pass legislation to get them done. Jeremy didn't get the legislation passed, and they didn't do a doggone thing, and then we know that Jeremy went rogue and, you know, is still out there fighting to keep himself out of jail. So the bottom line is, at least he was doing one good thing. I'm waiting for somebody to pick up the Don Quixote helmet and, you know, get poncho and go tilt at some windmills again.
Right.
Well,
it needs
Dave,
to be done.
The broader point here is that already we've heard by Chris's apt description that the highway department has a high level of so-called independence. And independence usually is a good word, but when independence refers to a government agency, it's equated with runaway. It's equated with a lack of accountability. It's equated with a lack of oversight by the legislature. And the only thing you could do to make that worse is to pile on a bunch of money to that unaccountable agency by guaranteeing it through a tax of every Arkansan in the Constitution of Arkansas. That is a mistake. Vote no on issue one.
All right. A break. We come back. Let's talk about Barrett and becoming a Supreme Court justice as the Dave Elswick Show continues here at 6 o'clock on 101.1 FM, The Answer. Let's finish up our time with Robert Steinbach, law professor at Bowen School of Law, lawyer here in Arkansas. His opinions, by the way, are his and his alone and not necessarily those of the school of law or the university where it's at. And then we got Chris Corbett. And Chris drew on his engineering background because he's a lawyer as well, but his strength is for law is in engineering, and gave us a nice background on everything dealing with the Arkansas Department of Transportation. Guys, we got about 6 minutes left here, and so I wanted to talk about another big national story, and that is that the Senate Judiciary Committee voted out Amy Coney Barrett and gave her a 12-0 vote and sent her name to the Senate to be confirmed as the next Supreme Court Justice. the Majority Leader McConnell says they'll vote on her come Monday. Your thoughts about this whole process? I think Graham was really great when the Democrats didn't show up trying to say, well, look, there's not a quorum with the two minority people of the party. And Graham says, I told Schumer back in 2013 when they changed the rules on this, and one of the rules they changed was that if none of the minority party shows up, the majority party moves forward with what they want to do. And that's exactly what Graham did. He says, I told him he'd have to pay, there would be a payback time, and that time is now. So I thought that was interesting. But your guys thought about this whole process thus far. I'll start with you, Chris. What do you think?
I think it's fantastic. Just to put it in perspective, so there's 22 people on the Judicial Nomination Committee, right? 12 of them are Republicans and 10 are Democrats. None of the Democrats showed up. So you're right. The vote was 12-0. And Amy Coney Barrett's going to go on to the full Senate for a vote for confirmation. And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I had Senator Tom Cotton on yesterday, and he made a very important statement for the folks that heard that. He said, you cannot allow the minority to control the majority. And that's what you would have done if you said, if we don't have two minority members there for the quorum, because quorum is there. They had just put in that two minority folks. And then they wrote another line saying that if it was just to muck up things, that they could move forward. And that's what the Democrats were trying to do. They were trying to muck up things because they lost control of the judiciary. Robert, you want to talk a little bit about that, about how the Constitution reads about this stuff?
Well, we've talked a number of times, Dave, about the fact that this is ordinary business. The Republicans didn't take a vote on Merrick Garland because they had the votes, not to take the vote, so to speak. In other words, the Republicans controlled the Senate, and so they didn't have to call him up. If they called up the vote, he would have lost the vote. So there's really no difference in that regard in terms of the outcome. Now they continue to have the Senate, and of course they have the presidency, and they called up the vote, and the vote was successful, needless to say. So that's how politics works. If you have the numbers and you can vote whatever you're doing, be it a candidate, be it a legislation forward, you do so. And if you don't have the numbers, well, then you lose. And we've had the numbers. And to be fair, it is entirely legal for the Democrats, should they win both the presidency and the Senate, which is a tall order, don't get me wrong, that they can make a law to change the number of seats to court pack. To pack
I agree.
The Supreme Court.
I agree. With that said, we're out of time.
Very
we're
good.
We're out of time. We got the news coming up, and Robert Steinbach, Chris Corbett, guys, have a great weekend. We'll talk again next week. Robert, I'll call and get you set up for Monday because the vote's coming up on Monday with the Senate on Barrett, and we'll talk about that as well. Until then, guys, have a great weekend. It's the Dave Elswick Show, 6 o'clock segment here on 101.1 FM, The Answer. Let's get to the news right now. Well, it's a Friday here on the Dave Elswick Show. It's in the 6 o'clock hour, and I want to give you some things to do this weekend. I mean, there's more than happening on college football. Well, the Razorbacks aren't even playing this weekend, so who cares about college football or professional football? What's important is where are you going to go to have a great time this weekend and at a reasonable cost? And that, of course, is to the movie theater. And what movie theaters are you going to go to? The VIP movie theaters, because they're the ones that are open. You've got the VIP movie theater down in Hot Springs. You got Riverdale 10 right there the highway here in Little Rock at the bottom of Cantrell Hill. You've got Cabot VIP Cinema, Searcy VIP Cinema, and up in Batesville, you even got the Oaks VIP Cinema. So you got plenty of places to go watch motion pictures. You know, this last move by the studios to not to release new product for the most part, the big tentpole movies, moving them back to 2021, 2022, you know, 2022, and things of that nature, has really had a huge business effect on some theater chains. Regal is reeling. There's no doubt about it from what I've read. And AMC now is reeling as well. Are you sharpening your money, Mr. Theater Owner, and looking at new theaters that you might want to pick up along the way as others go out of business?
Well, okay, so we want to start with that before we start with the new movies this week. Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, you're kind of talking about two different animals. You're talking about Regal, which is the second largest cinema chain in the United States.
Right.
But it's owned by a company called Cineworld, and they are based out of the United Kingdom. And they have a lot of operations in England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and then throughout Europe, especially in Eastern Europe, like Bulgaria, Poland, you know, Czechoslovakia, places like that. That so-called second wave has hit Europe harder, and they've locked down faster.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the reasons that Cineworld decided to close up shop. I think they were going to be forced to do that in the United Kingdom and Europe, and they just kind of got out in front of that. Now, they do have their best theaters in California open.
Oh, good.
And today they are opening up 11 locations in the state of New York. So those are open, but, you know, they've got 543 locations in the United States and Canada, and we're talking about 20 of them being open, the others being closed.
Right.
So Regal has done that. That communist Cuomo there in New York has finally allowed movie theaters in the state of New York that are not in the New York City metropolitan area to reopen today. And so in the rural areas of New York and in upstate New York, basically outside of the Manhattan area, you know, the five boroughs and those surrounding areas, those theaters are allowed to open. And, you know, that insane guy there, Gavin Newsom in California, you know, he'd rather see forests burn than actually, you know, log the trees and have jobs, that guy.
Right.
He has not allowed any theaters in the county of Los Angeles to reopen. So still, the two biggest box office draws in North America and the two most important cities in the world for the motion picture business, theaters in those two cities are still shut down. On the whole, Cineworld and Regal are a much better run company, operated much better, much more better capitalized than AMC. AMC is a Chinese-owned company from a Chinese conglomerate called the Wanda Group. They actually own AMC. They are the largest chain in the world. They are the largest chain in the United States. But they have made a lot of exceedingly dumb business moves just based on growth. And they bought up a lot of smaller chains, paid too much, you know, the credit crack they were on, easy money, and ended up with a lot of theaters that are just shabby and just aren't that good. When the pandemic hit, AMC had about 650 locations in North America, the United States and Canada, and they opened up roughly, they plan on opening roughly 600 of those. 50 of them they did not even want to or even try to reopen. They plan on opening about 600 of those up. And of those 600, you know, 400 of those locations are good theaters, nice theaters. They're in good metropolitan statistical areas. They're in good shape. They're theaters people want to go to. They've got 200 locations that are just shabby and ragged and wore out, and, you know, they've got some seats and screens and drapes in them and, you know, equipment in them from the 1980s, and they're just rancid. They're just horrible. Those I just don't see surviving, and I don't see anybody wanting. They're in much lesser tier markets, and, you know, they were put in a time when the world was different.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they've got some stuff that hasn't been updated since, you know, 1990, 1988.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's some junk out there. I mean, there's an AMC theater in Fort Smith. It is a 14-screen theater, and they started out in an old, closed-down service merchandising building and just kind of slammed it together in a jigsaw puzzle way. it's just raggedy. I mean, it's got some chairs that have been in that building since 1985.
So what you're saying is if you want to take it over, you would have to tear it down to the studs.
Oh, man, I don't want no junk like that. Nobody wants to take over an outhouse, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that. And you know, so, I mean, this is just there's a lot of junky AMCs out there, and I think they were forced to purchase those in order to get good locations. You know, you had some chains out there that had some good locations and some junk locations. AMC had to take the good with the bad. But, you know, they've got 600 locations. If 200 of those went away, on the whole, you wouldn't be missing much. They're in junky markets. They're in third, fourth tier markets. Or they're in locations where the area already has nicer theaters.
Gotcha.
So, you know, you're going to see that shrinkage, but I don't think anybody would be interested in that junk. Now, if you're talking about nice theaters in nice areas, whatever you're talking about, an AMC or a Regal or a Cinemark, any of those big chains, someone will take those. Now, I don't know if you're going to see mergers between smaller companies or regional players, or you're going to see outright acquisitions, but those nice cinemas aren't going away.
Okay. Well, let's move on. We've talked about the in the weeds, business aspects of this. People who are listening to this show, as you mentioned when you said, oh, you want to talk about that first and not the movies, let's talk about the movies now. And the rest of the way out, that's what we will discuss. Let's just start with Riverdale 10 right here in Little Rock. I'm looking at what I think are the three new movies: After We Collided, The Empty Man, and Over the Moon. Those are three movies I'm not familiar with at all. I want you to talk about them. Let's start with one that seems kind of Halloween-ish for us, and that's The Empty Man. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a brand new movie that's out today. It's released by 20th Century Fox. It's rated R. James Badgdale, Joel Courtney, Stephen Root, Maren Ireland, Owen Teague, all starred. David Pryor is the director. It's rated R, and it's from 20th Century Fox. It is new in theaters today. It is definitely a horror film for the Halloween season. Absolutely. Check that out. After We Collided is a sequel to the movie After. It is a romance film, also rated R. It is from Open Road Studios and Briarcliff Entertainment. That is the same company that released Honest Thief last week, starring Liam Neeson.
Great movie.
Yes. And, of course, we are still playing Honest Thief, starring Liam Neeson. It's PG-13. You've seen it. Number one film in the country. That is still on the screen. The War with Grandpa, PG, with Robert De Niro, good for the whole family. That's still playing. And also from last week, Two Hearts, PG-13, which is a romantic comedy, brand new in the theaters. That's on the screen as well. Now, the other film you mentioned is called Over the Moon. That is an animated feature that would definitely be nominated for Academy Awards in animation. It is PG. A small girl builds a rocket to travel to the moon in hopes of meeting the legendary moon goddess. And it's got a 95-minute running time. It's PG. It's animation. And I think that will be nominated for the Academy Award for animated films this year. Just a really good little family animated motion picture. That's out there. That's new this week. Of course, we're still playing Tenet, you know, and we've got Infidel on the screen with James Cavalese. That's playing. And we've got some cool classics that we brought back. We brought back The Addams Family, which is PG, good for the whole family for the Halloween season. We are playing Halloween, rated R, from 1978, to the original. That's on the screen this weekend. And
you know,
let me stop you.
Go ahead. I wanted to talk about Halloween. I remember when we showed it, and this is back at Market Street when you were there, and we showed it, and it was like pulling teeth to find a 35-millimeter copy of Halloween, and they hadn't digitalized it yet. When did they finally digitalize this movie and make it available to be able to be shown like this again? Because, to be honest, it's one of my all-time favorite horror movies that's out there.
there has been such a push for that. And as you go back and you look, the transition to digital light projection and digital movies really started in about 2006.
Uh-huh.
But it did not gain any steam until about 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, there was a big sweep converting all movie theaters to digital. And as that happened, they started making almost all films available in a digital version. They started converting these films to digital so they could get them reissued and into theaters. It became much, much easier to do counter-programming and to have these special events once these movies all got put to digital. You know, if you look back, you know, we've been doing this classic movie series for a long time.
Yeah,
and
we
if
have.
You look back at, yes, absolutely. We've been doing it for a long time. And if you look back to many years ago, we had the classic movie series going. That was something that no one else did. We had a classic movie series. Nobody else was showing classic movies. Nobody else was bringing those movies in. And this is back when everything was on 35-millimeter film. And it was just hard to do. And now that these movies have been digitalized, it is much more easy to do that. And you see more programming of this type. And that was going on before the pandemic. Now, of course, they're issuing a lot of movies back into theaters that you just would not have had a chance to see before. You know, Walt Disney Pictures is putting out their classics into movie theaters. We've got a new one every Friday from Walt Disney Pictures, and that's something that has been unprecedented in history. You could not go watch a classic or older Walt Disney movie in a theater before 2020.
That's right, because they had the Disney Vault. You remember this. And they had all of those old movies because I wanted to show some of the old movies and could not, you know, Swiss Family Robinson, things of that nature. And you couldn't get them to show because Disney had them locked away because they released them on DVD from time to time.
Was not allowed. There were no theatrical screenings of these films. And I don't think the casual observer pays attention, but, you know, once this situation passes that we're in now, you're not going to be able to go back to a movie theater and watch a classic Disney title. I mean, just like you know, today in Cabot in your hometown, we're playing The Nightmare Before Christmas,
right?
And we're playing Hocus Pocus, both classic Disney PG family titles on the screen there in Cabot. You can go check them out. That just never happens. We played all the Star Wars movies. We've got you know, Guardians of the Galaxy coming back next month. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that you're going to be able to go see on the big screen that you never could have seen before. You know, that's kind of cool. And we're showing these classic movies for $5. I mean, we've got a lot of specials going on.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. We got to get a break in. Let's talk about that when we come back, because there are some ones, classics out there. We've got one that we're going to show at Riverdale on the 27th. We're going to show the original Friday the 13th, 40th anniversary of that movie. We'll be back to tell you all about all of that with Matt Smith. He is the movie kingdom guru of Central Arkansas. He'll continue talking with us when we return on 101.1 FM, The Answer. Final segment with Matt Smith, our movie guru here in Central Arkansas. Real quickly, there's a lot of specials going on at the VIP cinemas. I would like Matt to talk about that, and then we'll run across the movies that are showing, and you need to get out and see a movie this weekend. Have some popcorn, have your you know, type of beverage that you want, and just know you're going to do it in a clean environment and a safe environment from COVID-19. With that said, let me turn it back over to Matt. Matt, what's the specials?
Well, we play classic movies. Anytime we're playing a classic movie, tickets are $5. All seats, all features, adults, children, matinee, evenings, nights, weekends. You get it for $5 for any of our classics. We've always got some classics on the screen. Tuesday night, every movie we play, including our brand new releases like The Empty Man, War with Grandpa, Honest Thief, Tenet, those tickets are just $5 every Tuesday. Wednesdays, buy a movie ticket, get a free bag of popcorn every Wednesday. Monday nights, we have Matinee Mondays. So on Monday night, you have the matinee ticket prices. No adult pricing on Monday night. All the tickets are discounted. And we're running all kinds of specials. We got candy for $1. We've got nachos for $3. We've got popcorn for just $5. A lot of specials going. Check out the website. It's Riverdale10.com in Little Rock. CerseiCinema.com in Searcy. HotSpringsVIP.com in Hot Springs. It is OaksVIPCinema.com in Batesville. And, of course, CabotVIPCinema.com in Cabot. And all the theaters feature luxury leather electric recliners with tables and reserved seating. Of course, we've got a full food menu. You know, anything you might want to eat there. All of our guidelines are posted on the websites as well. Just click that to check out the guidelines. And, of course, new this week, Empty Man, brand new from 20th Century Fox. We're still playing Honest Thief with Liam Neeson, War with Grandpa with Robert De Niro. New romantic comedy, Two Hearts, is out. And we got some cool classics on the screen, including Halloween from 1978, The Addams Family as well.
I got to tell you what, to be able to see Halloween again on the big screen, it is a joy. I just tell everybody that right now. If you've never seen it on the big screen, you've always watched it on your television, go see it at the theater this weekend for sure, because it still will get you on the edge of your seat no matter how many times you've watched it. When you can start seeing it on the big screen in that darkened theater, it makes a big deal. Now, Linda had an operation on her leg to take that metal stuff out of her ankle that she had, Matt, so we won't be able to make it this weekend. But I am going to watch the movie that scared me as a little kid so bad that even if I watch it today, it will give me nightmares. And tonight they're showing The Blob on television, the original The Blob with Steve McQueen. That movie scared the living you-know-what out of me when I was a kid. I mean, no doubt about it. That is, to me, it's one of the scariest movies. During the break, full disclosure, Matt and I talked about, you know, had they digitalized The Blob, because if they ever digitalize it, I will guarantee you it's going to be one of my classic movies. They're also showing the original The Thing with James Arness tonight on TV. I'll be watching that. I love that movie. Howard Hawks did such a great job of directing that. There's just some really good stuff that's out there. Typically, Fridays and Saturday nights are movie nights for me, but until Linda can walk really good, we'll have to forego it. But just know I wish I was there, Matt.
Speaking of classics, Tuesday night, we got Friday the 13th.
The 27th, that's right.
7 o'clock, Tuesday the 27th, the Dave Ellswood Classic. Tickets just $5. They're on sale at Riverdale10.com. Yeah. Maybe you guys can make it out Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll see how she's doing. It would be great because that's such a great movie, and it is a classic. And just for everybody's knowledge, to make everybody feel old, that remember going to the theater and seeing it, it is this year 40 years old. That's double what I usually use to determine what is a classic movie. Unbelievable.
Come check us out, Riverdale10.com.
Good place to go. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. I appreciate you, brother. You have a great weekend, and enjoy the time with your family doing some stuff this weekend.
Thank you.
Talk to you later now. Matt Smith, here on the Dave Ellswick Show, joins me every Friday for the most part between 8:30 and 9 o'clock to let you know what's on at the movies. If you haven't seen Tenet yet, it's still at Riverdale. Go see that movie. I can't impress you enough to go and see that movie. They clean their theaters after every movie. They do social distancing. The mask, you got to wear a mask while you come into the theater. When you get into the theater and get yourself set down, you can take that mask off, and no one is going to sit within 6 feet of you. Just know that. Social distancing. You'll be fine. You'll be safe. We're out of time. Monday, Power Panel will be back. We'll have a lot to talk that day as well. See you then on the Dave Ellswick Show.